Hello and welcome, welcome, welcome to the 61st episode of the Psychic Eye Mystery Podcast. I'm your host, Victoria Laurie, PEM Podcast, with my co-host and fabulous schmabulous sister, who I is. It's been a week since you were here. So much has happened. I got clobbered.
Yes. So
by the flu.
Yeah. Which you have been suggesting is going to come early this year, right?
Yep. I had started seeing it for my clients showing up as a bronchial kind of targeted influenza that was like bypassing like every other symptom and going straight for the chest. And that's where it whacked me. And then it, of course, because I'm living with my dear friend right now for the summer. In a haunted house. It took her out too. So poor love, she's a day behind me. It wasn't, you know, it was like 2 days of just doing nothing, having no energy to do anything. Like, I loved it how I woke up this morning. I was like, I feel good. I think I should go work out. And then after visiting the ladies room, I'm like, that's good enough.
I'm good.
Yeah. And my friend, Maggie got up and she got up late, like I think 10:30 or so. And she came downstairs and she laid down on the couch. She went back to sleep like for another couple hours. So it does whack you. If you're someone who is inclined to get a flu shot, please get it early. I had seen this coming up early. I had seen it as a bronchial infection. If your lungs aren't in great shape, you might really want to, I'm sorry, I'm sniffling. You might want to consider going ahead and get it.
And so. Then also the COVID vaccine should be available in September as well. Cases are up in Texas and the Southwest. So in Texas in particular. So it'd be great if people also got the COVID vaccine just to ensure that you're healthy throughout the fall and winter.
Tracked by the federal government.
Yeah. Well, there's that too. I like being tracked by the federal government. No, I don't.
Here I am.
Well, I mean, your driver's license.
They're going to put a chip in me.
Yeah, I'm sure they are.
They can.
You would be number one on the list of people they would put a chip
in. Well, you know, anybody who holds a phone. Hello.
Yeah, I know. Bing.
There you are. And that's not even the federal government. That's Mr. X. That's Mr. Elon, the space satellites.
Yes.
Just one more tip. If you end up getting this or anticipate that you might get this flu, Robitussin. I made it to the store the day after I got clobbered when Maggie got clobbered and it was just like an arm across the Robitussin aisle into the basket they went. So we were taking that, you know, not as directed every couple of hours. I think you're supposed to take it every 8 hours. We pretty much doubled up on that. And then that stuff, man, it packs a punch. So we're kind of walking around a little bit like, oh, I feel drunk. This is weird.
Yeah.
And the nighttime Robitussin, man, levels you, takes you down for the count.
Well, so. Robitussin is not sponsoring this episode, just in case you're wondering.
At all.
They don't even know who we are.
And they're probably like, oh, not used as directed. Home Alone moment.
Yeah.
Sorry, Robitussin. But it worked. It worked great, honestly, really did. So it made what would have been kind of a miserable 48 hours much easier. So recommend you stock up. And if you can't find any, it's probably my fault.
Yeah. Don't go to Northern
Michigan. We're experiencing
a
shortage in supplies in Michigan. Who could be the culprit? So anecdote this week. It's a really interesting one, actually, because every once in a while, I will pass on a message to a client that I feel almost like a tap. And what I mean by that is, they will say something like, okay, look for me with this particular symbol. And I pass that on to the relative. And then there's this feeling like, you too, right? So I had a reading with a lovely woman and her grandfather came through And he was, he showed me Bert and Ernie, and Ernie holding the rubber ducky, right? And so I almost asked my client, is there anything to do with Bert and Ernie? But the ducky was like super highlighted. So I said, is there anything to do with a rubber ducky or maybe Bert and Ernie or anything like that? And my client was at an absolute loss. So I said, okay, well, just remember that I said rubber ducky, because I believe that your grandfather, or excuse me, your dad is going to communicate with you via rubber duckies, right? Literally the next day, we're gathering supplies, and at the local Wally World, and I look down as we're checking out, and there's that, like, how adorable, right? Like, just so random. Just a random box of rubber duckies.
Yes.
And then the day after that, can you see it?
No.
Am I sharing screen? No. Okay. Technology is so hilarious. Boop. The day after that, yeah, Maggie invited two of her best friend's children up to the lake house, and the girls, you know, we're looking for stuff to do. And Meg has all of these vintage games in a cabinet. And one of the girls went rummaging through and pulled up that one. And then the next day I was cleaning up, and boom, there it is. There's Ernie holding the rubber ducky, right? Like, and just to let you know, this game was at the bottom of a whole stack of games. That's
true, because I put it there.
Yeah. And then, when, let's see, hold on just one second. And then when, nope, I don't want that one. Yes, maybe. Okay. Is this, there we go. And then the day after that, I was floating through Twitter, and when the RICO indictment was handed down, you know, there's Ernie holding a rubber ducky. So I thought it was just like, and I wasn't looking, like, I was not looking for rubber duckies, but they just popped up, boom, 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 boom. The one at Wally World was the one that, like, really caught my attention, because it was just so, I looked in all of the other aisles, there were no other little boxes of rubber duckies, just happened to be the one that Meg was checking out at, and I was like, are you kidding? And it was literally the next day, so I thought that was really, really cute. So anyone out there who is feeling kind of like, I wonder if my relative wants to communicate with me, you know, find a symbol that's odd that you don't see every day, like a rubber ducky is perfect, right? Or Bert and Ernie or Sesame Street character or, you know, whatever.
I actually think this is also our uncle and father messing with you, for sure. For sure, because it's more Ernie than it is Bert, and that's got me convinced.
Yeah. So my uncle's name was Tom, my father's name was Jerry, and Tom and Jerry,
and right? They were named after the cocktail, not the cartoon characters, just so we're right. clear, because that tells you about our grandmother.
Yeah, they, I know, right? They definitely resembled the cartoon characters.
Yes,
right. Because Jerry was a short little mouse and Tom was this tall cat. So they definitely resemble that. And they also resemble Bert and Ernie, not only in physique, but in personality as well. So my Uncle Tom was gruff and grouchy and furrowed brow constantly. So so who knows? It could have been Jerry, you know,
doing the rubber.
This was, you know, this was my client's father. So it absolutely could have been, you know, him.
Yes. Well, you said you felt that extra tap. So I'm thinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It, you know, and I have to admit that when I saw the Sesame Street game, I thought, oh, Jerry, you're up to your tricks. Like, that was my first thought. So,
yep. Not OF bomb.
Well, that followed.
That's, I mean, always, every time Victoria gives me a reading as of late, he'll show up and she'll go, so F, annoying. He's here again. F yeah. off. And then, you know, I think it's hilarious.
We neither one of us wants to hear from him. And it's just so strange having to pass on a message from someone that you really spent, you know, 30 years trying to get away from, and have nothing more to do with. And then, you know, they pop into your energy and they expect you to play messenger. Like, it's just weird. I don't know, this sort of weird sense of, am I really interpreting for this jerk that, you know, was a terrible person and abused me and abused my sister? And, you know,
well, you handle it really well. I mean, it's only two or three F-bombs before you start to pass on the message. Yeah, so I'm feeling right. Pretty good about it, you know?
Yeah. And he's, you know, I hate to give him credit, but to his credit, he is very, 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 very sorry.
He's also tenacious and obnoxious, but that's okay.
Well, you know, and that's, again, the great point. You can take the person out of the plane, but you can't take the personality out of the soul. So whatever your personality was here, your personality is that over there. It's just that
what's recognized. I think that's what's recognized by us over there. I would assume you'd have a variety of different personalities, past lives, et cetera, but we recognize that personality. That's kind of what I think.
You know, and to that point, since I have a feeling that you kind of travel through time with that personality, like that's sort of the characteristic of your soul. So, you know, sweet souls probably traveled through time and reincarnations as sweet souls. And then, you know, snippy, snipey, easily irritated souls like me, you know, yeah.
What?
I know. But anyway, yeah. So it's easy to recognize him because his personality really comes through. Like, he's not someone who would in any way step forward in any other manner other than like a loving way, but his personality is still there. So loving and apologetic.
Yeah, I ain't getting a loving, but that's okay. Anyway.
Well, it's there. It's there. It's just.
So you must not be passing that on.
No, because then it'll double down. No, thank you.
Where's the garlic? Where's the salt? Yeah, where's the garlic? Okay.
Apology accepted. Go do your thing. Just go do your thing. Bye-bye.
All right. So instead of a book promotion this week, you were going to offer something kind of special and talk hot topics, right?
I don't know how special it is. It's raining indictments. So this is the thing, is that I keep sort of looking at the headlines and I cannot understand why there isn't more energy behind this Georgia indictment of the former guy.
What kind of energy do you mean, honey? Like, what do you mean? More tension?
Anxiety from the GOP.
Oh, okay.
You know, like absolute
panic.
Panic, you know, running in the streets. This man will be in jail. Absolutely, 100% will be in jail within the next 18 months, serving anywhere from I think he's going to be serving 15 to 20, but serving anywhere from 5 to like 20 years. It is a fucking slam dunk. And I've read the indictment. I have not witnessed the trial. He is innocent until proven guilty. But he's fucking guilty. So there is no get out of jail free card. He cannot be pardoned by Georgia's governor. He cannot be pardoned by a future president. He will have to serve, period. And he will serve. And there is no delaying this trial. I had to, you know, giggle when it was like, can we delay this till April of 2026? Oh, yeah, sure. Why not? Yeah. Justice delayed. Sure. That is not going to happen. So there is no way out of this. It's going to be quick and dirty. The evidence I feel is really overwhelming. And my sense is that he's toast. He's done. And so will that happen after the primary is the big question. And I think it's going to be like very, very close to that primary. And I think that that is not going to dissuade this man of running. You know, the right thing to do would be to step down. The right thing to do would have been to have done none of the federal crimes that he's accused of. But, you know, this is who we're dealing with. So there's this feeling of this kind of tsunami of what do we do? What do we do coming after he's convicted? And I can't believe it's not here yet. So gird your loins, strap in. It's going to be a bumpy ride. I'm not seeing like violence or civil war. I know he would love nothing but that's not what I'm seeing at all. Like, not at all. I'm seeing like, it's starting to dawn on a few of these people, like, holy fuck, you know, maybe he was not such a good guy. And, you know, anything to kind of snap this, some people out of it.
Well, he definitely picked the wrong state to break the law in.
Yes, he did.
You know, so.
Yes, he did. Definitely. And it still stuns me, Sans. It still stuns me that truly democracy, our way of life, our freedom, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, came down to 1,400 individuals at the Capitol.
Yeah.
The Capitol Police. Like, that just, you know, against 10,000. That just blows my mind. We really could have been living in, you know, North Korea kind of world. We really could have. And we avoided it by the thinnest of margins. So the law held, not much else, but the law held. So yeah, let's never go there again.
I hope not. Yeah.
Yeah. But in future news, beyond that, once that's dealt with, and that will be dealt with, I think right around, like, I feel like the trial is going to happen in October, November. And I feel like a conviction is going to be the end of December, January or February, kind of in that time frame. So I'm doing sort of a 3-month thing. And then we'll come the next trial, which I also feel he'll be convicted of. That's the J6 indictment in Washington, D.C. Will he see jail time because he can't keep his mouth shut? Probably, because he can't keep his mouth shut. So it's going to be very, very interesting. And he will never yield, ever, ever, ever. So he's, you know, flushing the GOP down the toilet with him. So I expect a runaway for the Dems, whoop-a-doo, which would be great. You know, it would be great because we can continue with President Biden's agenda. The economy is booming. Inflation is down. Production is up. Investment is up. All of this great stuff is happening. Unemployment is down. House sales are up. Like, it's firing on every cylinder, as I predicted. So, you know, happy times are here again. It's looking
hopefully
good.
Hopefully, yes. Yeah. Hopefully, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, any other hot topics besides pandemic, flu season, politics, economy?
Well, you did
weather.
Say
weather. How about the weather?
Hot topic. Yeah, hot topic. So the weather, Lahaina, the wildfires. Yeah,
yeah, in Lahaina. People. Yeah. Horrific.
Yeah. And you and I have both been to Hawaii a number of times. I've been down that street. I'm sure tens of thousands millions of people have traveled down that street. And it's just gutting to think it's all gone and to think about those poor people trapped in their cars, yards away from the Pacific Ocean, like literally yards away from the Pacific Ocean. But that smoke was overwhelming and it moved way too fast and, you know, blinding, disorienting. That's a terrible, terrible, terrible way to go. And my heart really goes out to everyone there. Hawaii has concerned me for a long time. I just feel it's super, super, super vulnerable. And then in Kauai, they're losing the number one tree, the number one native tree that they have on the island. So there are billions of trees that are threatened by a fungus that kills these trees within like 2 weeks. And there's no way to stop it. And if you fly into Kauai, you can see overhead, you can see patches of just dead trees all over the place. So this beautiful, lush, green jewel in the crown of Hawaii is destined to, I think, look like a little bit of a blight in the future, which is just heartbreaking. And then the heat, the wildfires, I don't really see a lot of rain coming to Maui anytime soon. So it's just going to, this relentless heat is just going to sort of continue. I do predict, though, since you talked about weather, since we're bringing up weather, that this year on the East Coast and the Midwest, we're going to get a lot of snow. That's my thinking, is we're going to get a lot of snow. I'm sorry.
No.
Yeah.
No. Well, at least I have my snowblower tuned up that I didn't even rev up last year. There was no snow. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. $250 to tune up the snowblower and no snow.
Nothing. No well, snow. At least it's tuned up. It's ready to go.
This is true. Yes. Yeah. But I don't really want to use it. Let's be clear.
But.
I wouldn't be surprised. It's been a very, very wet summer. So my grass is the greenest I've ever seen it in.
Yeah. Ours is here too. It's been cold too. It's been a cold summer.
I can't say that, but it's definitely been very, very green. So, all right. So do you want to get to today's case?
Of course I do. Let's fire when ready, girlfriend.
All right. So we're going to cover, we're still in our rich and famous Hollywood kind of theme here. So today we're going to explore what happened to Tupac Shakur. It's still an open case as to who actually killed him and the motive behind it. So he was born Tupac Amaru Shakur, also known by his stage name as Tupac and Machiavelli, was an American rapper and actor, and he's among the best-selling music artists, having sold more than 75 million records globally, and is widely believed to be one of the most influential and successful rappers of all time. He's also considered a symbol of activism against inequality, as much of his music addressed the social issues plaguing inner cities. Sadly, at the young age of 25, he died on September 13, 1996, 6 days after he was shot 4 times by an unknown gunman. Due to uncooperative witnesses and minimal pursuit of gang-related leads, this case remains an unsolved homicide. He was born Lazane Parrish Crooks on June 16, 1971, in East Harlem, New York, to his mom, Afeni Shakur, and his biological father, William Billy Garland, both of whom were political activists and Black Panther Party members. He was renamed Tupac at the age of one, and he was raised by his mother, Afeni. The family, including his stepbrother and half-sister, relocated to Baltimore, Maryland in 1984, and while he was attending the Baltimore School of the Arts in 10th grade, he studied poetry, jazz, ballet, and performed in a variety of Shakespeare's plays, and as the Mouse King role in the Nutcracker Ballet. It was at this school that Tupac befriended future actress Jada Pinkett Smith. He was known for his humor, and he could mix with all crowds, and he earned a reputation as the school's best rapper after winning several rap competitions. In 1988, Tupac moved to Marin City, California, in the San Francisco Bay Area. He attended high school in nearby Mill Valley, but did not graduate, opting instead to earn his GED at a later date. He began recording under the stage name MC New York in 1989, and in 1990, he joined Digital Underground as a roadie and backup dancer. And in 1991, he made his debut under the stage name Tupac on the group's January 1991 single, Same Song, which was featured on the movie soundtrack, Nothing But Trouble. His debut album, Tupacalypse Now, arrived in November of 1991, featuring several songs that poetically depicted the individual struggles of urban Black concerns. With 500,000 copies sold, the album was certified gold. And despite its relevance and popularity, U.S. Vice President, then Vice President Dan Quayle said, "There is no reason for a record like this to be released. It has no place in our society." He also commented about Murphy Brown, but we won't get into that at this point. Tupacalypse Now established Tupac as a central figure in the West Coast hip hop for his conscious rap lyrics. He went on to achieve further critical and commercial success with his follow-up albums, Strictly For My N-I-G-G-A-Z in 1993 and Me Against the World in 1995. His 1996 Diamond Certified album, All Eyes on Me, was the first double-length album in hip-hop history and featured volatile gangster rap lyrics. His posthumously released album, The 7-Day Theory, was certified 4 times multiple platinum, and MTV ranked it number 9 among the hip-hop's greatest albums ever. In addition to his music career, Tupac also found considerable success as an actor, with starring roles in Juice in 1992, Poetic Justice in 1993, Above the Rim in 1994, bullied in 96, gridlocked in 97, and gang-related in 1997. While he earned meaningful success in the entertainment world, his personal life was fraught with controversy. In addition to his mother and biological father's active involvement in the Black Panthers, his stepfather, Mutula Shakur, spent 4 years among the FBI's 10 most wanted fugitives, and his godmother, Asada Shakur, is a former member of the Black Liberation Army who was convicted of the first-degree murder of a New Jersey state trooper and is still wanted by the FBI. Tupac formed ties to the Mob Piru Bloods, a street gang that often battled with the Southside Crips over territory and personal slights. In 1993, while visiting Los Angeles, Christopher Wallace, also known as the Notorious B.I.G., Biggie Smalls and Biggie, asked a local drug dealer to introduce him to Tupac, and they quickly became friends. The pair socialized together when Tupac went to New York or Biggie to Los Angeles, and reportedly Biggie asked Tupac to manage him, but Tupac instead suggested that Sean Combs could actually make him a star. Tupac often invited Biggie onto the stage to rap with him, and together they recorded the songs Running from the Police and House of Pain. Based upon their success, Tupac welcomed Biggie to join his side group, Thug Life, but Biggie opted to form his own side group, the Junior MAFIA, with his Brooklyn friends Lil C's and Lil Kim. Thereafter, their relationship quickly deteriorated, and their well-known rivalry touched the hip-hop scene on both coasts. In November of 1993, Tupac, his road manager Charles Fuller, record executive Haitian Jack Agnew, and an unidentified fourth man were charged in New York with sexually assaulting Ayanna Jackson in Tupac's hotel room. Tupac was also charged with illegal possession of a firearm, as two guns were found in the hotel room. On November 30th, 1994, while in New York recording verses for a mixtape, Tupac was reportedly distracted by his beeper. Music manager James Jimmy Henchman Roseman reportedly offered Tupac $7,000 to stop by Quad Studios in Times Square that night to record a verse for his client Little Sean. Although Tupac was unsure about the opportunity, he agreed to the session as he needed the cash to offset his legal fees. However, upon arrival at the Quad Studios lobby, three men robbed and beat him at gunpoint. Tupac resisted and was shot 5 times. Against doctor's advice, Tupac checked out of the Metropolitan Hospital Center a few hours after surgery and to discreetly recuperate at the home of actress Jasmine Guy. The following day, on December 1st, Tupac arrived at a Manhattan courthouse, heavily bandaged and in a wheelchair, to receive the jury's verdict for the Ayanna Jackson sexual abuse case. He was acquitted of 3 counts of sodomy and the associated gun charge, but convicted of 2 counts of first-degree sexual abuse for groping Ms. Jackson. Tupac posted a $25,000 bond and spent the next few weeks being cared for by his mother and a private doctor at Jasmine Guy's home. The Fruit of Islam and former members of the Black Panther Party stood guard around the house to protect Tupac while he recuperated. In February of 1995, Tupac was sentenced to 18 months to 4.5 years in prison by a judge who declared, quote, an act of brutal violence against a helpless woman, end quote. Tupac's lawyer characterized the sentence as out of line with the conviction and the setting of bail at $3 million as inhumane. His accuser later filed a civil suit seeking $10 million for punitive damages, which was subsequently settled. After Tupac's conviction, Jacques Arnett's case was separated and closed via a misdemeanor plea without incarceration. Tupac came to believe that Agnew had set him up as his accuser. Ayanna Jackson was connected to and had sexual relations with both Jacques Arnett and James Jimmy Henchman Roseman, who he theorized was behind his 1994 Quad Studios assault and shooting. Tupac began serving his prison sentence on February 14, 1995. On October 12th, he bonded out of maximum security Denmore Clinton Correctional Facility in the process of appealing his conviction. Marion Sue Knight, CEO of Death Row Records, arranged for posting of his $1.5 million bond. With that, Tupac returned to Los Angeles and signed on to Suge Knight's label, Death Row Records, which was at the center of the budding East Coast-West Coast hip-hop rivalry. In a 1995 interview with Vibe, Tupac accused Sean Combs, Jimmy Henchman, Roseman, and Notorious B.I.G., all of whom were at Quad Studios at the time of his November 1994 robbery and shooting, among others, of setting up or being privy to the assault. Vibe alerted the names of the accused, which seemed to fuel the burgeoning East-West Coast hip-hop rivalry. So in 1995, months after the assault and robbery, Sean Combs and Biggie released the track Who Shot Ya, which Tupac took personally. So he released a diss song, Hit 'Em Up, in which he targeted Biggie Combs and their record label, Junior MAFIA. At the end of Hit 'Em Up, he mentioned rivals Mobb Deep and Chino. On the night of September 7th, 1996, Tupac traveled to Las Vegas, Nevada to celebrate his business partner, Tracy Danielle Robinson's birthday, and attended the Bruce Seldon versus Mike Tyson boxing match at the MGM Grand with Suge Knight. Tupac, Suge Knight, and several members of Death Row Records gathered at the MGM hotel lobby following the match. One member of the group, Trevon Lane, spotted Orlando Baby Lane Anderson, a member of the Southside Compton Crips, prompting a fistfight. In July of 96, Anderson was involved in an altercation at the Lakewood Mall where he and his entourage assaulted Trevon Lane and stole his Death Row medallion. The theft was extremely disrespectful and infuriated fellow members of Death Row. Tupac can be seen on the MGM security camera running over to Anderson, followed by his entourage, and throwing the first punch. Anderson suffered a rather severe beatdown by five men with no one to help him. However, he was able to escape the worst of the attack by covering his face. Shortly thereafter, security cameras captured footage of Tupac stopping by his hotel room before heading out with Suge Knight to the Suge's Death Row nightclub, Club 662. The group traveling in a black BMW 750 IL sedan, which was part of a larger convoy of about 10 vehicles, were stopped at about 11 p.m. on Las Vegas Boulevard by a bicycle-mounted police for playing loud music and the lack of license plates. After the plates were retrieved from the trunk of the vehicle, the driver was released without a ticket. At about 11:15 at a traffic light, a white four-door late-model white Cadillac sedan pulled up to the passenger side of the BMW, and an occupant rapidly fired into the car. Tupac was struck by bullets four times, once in the arm, once in the thigh, and twice in the chest, with one bullet entering his right lung. He was transported to ICU at University Medical Center in Southern Nevada, where he was heavily sedated and put on life support. 6 days following the shooting on September 13, 1996, Tupac Shakur, suffering from internal bleeding, was pronounced dead at 4:03 p.m. The official cause of death are respiratory failure and cardiopulmonary arrest associated with multiple gunshot wounds. His body was cremated the following day. While the case remains unsolved, theories about who was responsible for murdering Tupac Shakur include the first theory. In 2002, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Chuck Phillips of the LA Times reported that the assault Baby Lane Anderson suffered at the hands of Tupac and his Death Row entourage in the MGM lobby prompted him to demand retaliation by his fellow Crips gang members, which they agreed to follow through with. Chuck Phillips theorized that Baby Lane Anderson fired the fatal gunshots that killed Tupac and that Tupac's rival, Notorious B.I.G., provided the gun, a .40-caliber Glock pistol, to carry out the hit. He also believes that Biggie offered to pay the Crips $1 million if they successfully killed Tupac Shakur. The second theory is that in October of 2011, former LAPD detective Greg Kading, who had investigated the murder of Christopher Wallace, Biggie Smalls, released a book alleging that Sean Diddy Combs commissioned Baby Lane Anderson's uncle, Dwayne Davis, to kill Tupac and Suge Knight for $1 million. Davis's account of the night in question is that four men, including himself and all the members of the Southside Crips, were in a white Cadillac that pulled up alongside the BMW that Suge Knight and Tupac Shakur were riding in. Davis stated that the car was driven by Terrence T. Brown, DeAndre Dre Smith, and Baby Lane Anderson, who were all in the backseat of the Cadillac. He claims that after leaning out of the back window, Anderson fired the shots that killed Tupac Shakur. In terms of the police investigation, Biggie Smalls denied any role in Tupac Shakur's murder. In support of this, his family produced computerized invoices and witness statements showing them that he was working in a New York recording studio the night of the shooting. On March 9, 1997, 6 months after Tupac's murder, 24-year-old Christopher Wallace, a.k.a. Biggie Smalls, was murdered by an unidentified assailant in a drive-by shooting while visiting Los Angeles. At 12:45 a.m., Biggie Smalls was traveling in the front passenger seat of a GMC Suburban to return to his hotel after leaving a Soul Train Awards after-party held at the Peterson Automotive Museum. His SUV stopped at a red light 50 yards from the museum, and a black Chevy Impala pulled up alongside it. The Impala's driver, an unidentified African-American man dressed in a blue suit and bow tie, rolled down his window, drew a 9mm blue steel pistol, and fired at Biggie's car. Four bullets hit Biggie Smalls, the final shot proving to be fatal. Although rumors circulated that Anderson had bragged about shooting Tupac, Lieutenant Larry Spinoza of the Las Vegas Police Department told the media, at this point, Orlando Anderson is not a suspect in the shooting of Tupac Shakur. Purportedly, Anderson was dismissed as a suspect because the fight in the MGM Grand lobby had happened just hours before Tupac's murder. Las Vegas police were only able to interview Anderson once briefly before his death at the age of 23 on May 29, 1998, from an unrelated shooting. Adding to the mystery, Las Vegas police failed to show up with a member of Tupac's entourage who witnessed the shooting from the vehicle traveling behind Tupac's and told police he could identify one or more of the assailants. That witness, 19-year-old rapper Yaki Kadifi, was killed in an apartment building in Orange, New Jersey, 2 months after Tupac's murder. Thereafter, the investigation stalled for almost 27 years until very recently. On July 17, 2023, Las Vegas police conducted a court-authorized search of the residence of Dwayne Davis, who is now 60 years old, in Henderson, Nevada, in connection with the Tupac Shakur homicide investigation. Among the items seized by investigators were computers and other electronic storage devices such as thumb drives, CDs, external hard drives, and audio recordings. Investigators were also looking for notes, writings, ledgers, and other handwritten or typed documents concerning television shows, documentaries, YouTube episodes, book manuscripts, and movies concerning the murder of Tupac Shakur. Police retrieved a Pokeball USB drive, a black iPhone in a black case, a gold iPad with a broken screen, a gold iPad in a pink case, and a purple Toshiba laptop. A second Toshiba laptop, a Toshiba hard drive, and an HP laptop were also located. The book Compton Street Legend, co-written by Davis, a Vibe magazine featuring Shakur, purported marijuana and tubs with photographs in them were also collected. The evidence in the case is now being presented to the Las Vegas grand jury, though it could take months for any charging decisions to come about. While investigators have long believed the gunman is likely already dead, the current investigation could lead to someone being charged as an accomplice. Considered to be hip-hop royalty, Tupac is considered among the most influential and versatile rappers of all time. A six-time Grammy nominee and five number one albums, Tupac has sold 33 million albums, earning him a place in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2017. While his music legend lives on, perhaps after 27 years, the public will come to know who actually killed this prolific artist. My sources for this article include Wikipedia, Tupac Shakur, Wikipedia, Orlando Anderson, Wikipedia, The Notorious B.I.G., ABC News, Tupac Shakur Timeline, Key Events in Rapper's Murder Investigation by Meredith DeLiso, July 2023, and NBC News, Tupac Shakur Warrant for the House of Gang Member Who Says He Witnessed the Murder by Andrew Blankstein and Antonia Planis, July 20th, 2023. So, Victoria, somewhat of a complicated case.
Yes. Yeah, I was just about to say that. It's like so many moving parts, you know, because you've got multiple crimes, you've got multiple victims, you've got multiple motives, you've got the interlacing of cultures, and I guess, you know, ways of doing things that will remain kind of hidden, will remain sort of, you know, like, this is a whole subterfuge of culture, what was going on with all of these people. Because they didn't trust the police, and why would they, you know? So truly, like, why would they? So they carried out, I believe, their own justice. I've always believed that Biggie was involved in Tupac's murder. And I've always believed that a relative or someone very close to Tupac killed Biggie. I've always believed that. I may be wrong. I could be wrong. But my sense is that the two of them kind of did each other in. I've never really bought the theory that Sean Combs had anything to do with this. Now, he might know things, but there's a feeling like he's disconnected from these two particular crimes. So it's super complicated. I hope that with the presentation of all of the evidence that they can come up with a conclusion that is sort of satisfactory. I doubt it. I think that because no one has stepped forward and said, yeah, I did it. And there isn't, you know, a literal smoking gun. People will always question and always wonder and speculate. which is why we do these podcasts, so we can wonder and speculate.
Do you think that Anderson was the one who pulled the trigger, or do you think it was someone else?
So Anderson was beaten hours before, right?
Yes, correct.
I don't think he was. I think there was another, I think it was someone else, honestly. I agree with the detective who was like, you know, he's been ruled out because he was a physical mess just hours earlier. He probably had a concussion. I'm assuming he had a concussion. I've had a bad concussion. It's very hard to walk a straight line, much less shoot a gun.
Yeah, so, accurately.
Yeah, exactly. Could be wrong, but I don't think it was him. I think that there were other people in the car. And I think that I can't say that Biggie ordered the hit, but I also can't say that he didn't know about it and encourage it and maybe offered some money for it. So when you have the kind of success that Tupac had, it's very easy to be very envious of that and to continue to sort of think that his success, continued success, because basically at the money's touch, everything he touched turned to gold, start to think that the system was geared toward him rather than towards yourself, if you're Biggie Smalls. Again, it could be wrong, but my feeling was a lot of it was inspired by jealousy and envy, which is really a shame, because Tupac, although troubled, obviously had immense talent. Just yes. Immense talent.
Yeah. Actor, singer, songwriter, performer, right. Dancer. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
For me, what's so tragic is that everybody connected to the case were all under the age of 30, and all but one or two are dead at this point. Yeah. So their lives ended very early on, you know, when there was so much talent to be had and to be experienced. So,
right.
Yeah.
I guess the, you know, the thing that we can walk away with, I guess, is that Tupac and Biggie offered so much inspiration to, like, they were the platform, right? Mm-hmm. It's like the Beatles were the platform, you know, for rock and roll. These guys were the platform for hip hop and rap and all that great stuff. So we have that at least, you know, if we didn't have enduring works from them, we have that at least. So, yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, I appreciate your insights. I think it's interesting that there've been so many different theories about what happened, and it's nice to hear your perspective on what you think went down and why.
Yeah. And even then, you know, I this was obviously not, I don't think it was like really well planned out. I think it was just opportunity. They saw him leaving the parking lot. They decided to tuck in line. They saw an opportunity to pull up next to him and shoot him dead, and they took it. So I don't think that this was a big, huge plot necessarily that took weeks of planning. I think it was a little bit more on the opportunistic side, but I do believe that there was lots of communication going back and forth as to what was happening and approval at the top. So, you know, Biggie Smalls obviously wasn't anywhere in the state, but I think
phones worked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I believe. So, just sad all the way around.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, that concludes this week's mystery. And if you would like to learn more about Victoria,
visit victorialaurie.com. If you'd like to sign up for a reading, visit victorialaurie.com. If you'd like to learn more about my books, visit victorialaurie.com.
Just go to the damn website. Like,
click whatever you want. Just click.
Lots of buttons to push.
Yes. And if you loved our podcast, and we've got quite a few people who let us know that they do love our podcast. And, you know, can I just hand some major credit to you, Sandy, because week after week, you know, you really deliver these great write-ups, and these cases are very involved. And I know that it takes like a solid day or two to write these. So
what do you want? What do you want?
You to come back and cook for me. Duh. The place was so neat and tidy, and dinners and were so delicious. Like, it was just like, oh, like
I didn't, if I could even turn plan
you into my own little personal butler.
Yeah. Great. That's what I want to be, your butler. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Wow. My career aspirations just went.
And you thought going to Harvard Business School was not going to be a waste of time.
All right. So anyway, thank you very much to everyone for tuning in. Love your comments. Keep them coming. We are going to start a Facebook page dedicated to the podcast where we can have more dialogue around these cases. Hopefully that will launch in early September. Just sort of shifting residences at the moment. So as soon as that gets settled, we'll be able to
do that.
Lots
of moving. We're just on the go.
On the go. Please subscribe to our page. If you like today's podcast, please give us a thumbs up. Please subscribe. Please leave a comment and tell your friends about our podcast. We'd love to have more people join in on the fun that is the Sandy and Victoria.
Happy hour.
There you go. Yeah. So until next week, everyone, thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll catch you in a week.
Take care, guys. Thank you.